Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm your host, Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And we're here to do Chapter 13 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Gryffindor versus Ravenclaw. But before we claw into it...
No.
Yeah.
That doesn't even work.
Good. It does.
Oh, how?
Dig into it, claw into it, like Ravenclaw.
No.
We start with the chapter summary done in 30 seconds or less, and it is Joe's turn to do so. So I'm going to get my timer out. You know what I should do? I have a stopwatch now for school because my kids have been doing presentations, so I've been stopwatching them. I should bring the stopwatch home once we're done with the presentations.
It's really not that important. Stopwatch.
Yeah, but my phone battery's already at 26%, so like who knows what 30 seconds in a stopwatch is going to do to it.
You might need a new phone.
Maybe. All right, whenever you're ready.
Ron and Hermione are still fighting about Crookshanks 8. If Crookshanks 8 scabbards are out, Ron is very upset and Harry tries to cheer him up by letting him ride the Firebolt after practice. The Gryffindors have their game against Ravenclaw and Harry uses a Patronus on Malfoy, who is dressed up as a Dementor. Harry wins the game and everyone parties. Then Sirius Black wakes up Ron with a knife.
That was like just under 17 seconds.
Nice.
I'm hoping this will be a quick one. Especially after we put out what is probably going to be an hour and 50 minute long podcast last week, but it's coming out tomorrow, but it's last week, but time is an illusion. Yeah. So
listening to this, it was last week,
but when we're having this conversation, it was tomorrow. I didn't think we had to get into this for another few chapters. All right, let's talk about Gryffindor versus Ravenclaw. So Ron is upset, as Joe said, over the perceived loss of Scabbers. And the incriminating evidence that he found last chapter was
blood and Crookshanks' hair.
Okay. Go with me for a minute here. I don't know a lot about cats, but it's Crookshanks' ginger hair, correct?
Yes.
Ron is a ginger. Is cat hair and human hair discernibly different?
Very much so.
How?
I think...
We're all mammals, bro. Like, I think it's all kingdom animalia.
Fur and hair is when hair falls out of your head versus fur falls out of your head. A lot of time, fur has, like, white on the end, like the part that came out of... The animal's skin has a little bit of white coloration to it.
My hair has that. Yeah. Like if I rip out a hair, it'll have like the like white orb. I don't know how to describe it.
But like if you pick up hair off the floor that fell out of your head, does it have that on it?
I don't look at it that closely.
Okay.
But like Ron presumably has short red hair. Could that not be confused with cat hair?
Not if it came out in a tuft. And also,
We know that it's cat hairs. Like, you know when you go to somebody's house who has pets. And, yeah. Like, things are... There's pet hair. And some people are better than others, but, like, there's pet hair. I don't think I could tell the difference between the pet hair and the human hair if it was the same color and roughly the same length.
I think you could.
Okay.
Like, I think even you could.
What does that mean? Okay, well, I'm just positing that as a theory because we don't know that Scabbers is dead and Hermione seems pretty confident that Crookshanks did not kill Scabbers. So I'm just throwing
Hermione
it out
seems
there.
Seems like she's in denial.
This could be Ron's hair.
It's certainly not. And Hermione doesn't even argue that. Hermione says, well, it could be there
Hermione's
from a while ago.
She's not on my level. She's not here thinking about the pet hair.
Because she knows better.
Okay. Well, whatever you say.
Okay.
So Hermione is kind of in denial. She's like, have you checked under the bed? Which is a little bad. And Fred and George also attempt to cheer Ron up by basically reminding him of how old Scabbers was and how much Ron hated Scabbers.
Yeah.
And like Ron is a complainer, but when Fred suggests that Ron simply get a new rat, it feels a little insensitive to me. Do you agree?
Yes and no. Yes, it's definitely insensitive, but he is trying to cheer him up. He's putting that effort in. And also, that's not uncommon of like, well, let's get a new goldfish. Let's get a new puppy.
I guess I assume there's like a grieving period that you're usually allowed.
You're allowed to grieve for as long as you want.
Not allowed, maybe, but like most people take a grieving period. It's not like the next day when somebody's like, just go get a new pet.
A lot of times, like, not always, but a lot of times with a kid, with a child, you might want to.
Not like a goat. Okay.
Oh, boy.
We're talking about pets.
With a child, you might want to get a new pet, you know, sooner to help them cope with it.
And okay.
Yeah, it's not uncommon to cope with a loss by getting a new pet.
I guess, sure. Truly, my only frame of reference for like somebody losing a pet is when Daisy died. My grandma had this dog, Daisy, that she got when I was 5 years old. Daisy was ancient. By the time she passed, Daisy had to be like 17 years old by the time she passed. And my grandma was very attached to this dog. And so it was very sad and tragic when Daisy died. But then she got a new dog. And I feel like there was a decent gap of time.
Yes, your grandma did not run out and get a new one.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I ever met Daisy.
Really? Huh. Okay. Daisy was old. beyond that... What do you make of this?
They also try and cheer him up by saying, you know, he was getting very old. This was probably the less cruel way to go.
And I think that's fair.
Yeah, maybe.
And like Ron especially has been talking about how stressed Scabbers is, that like losing hair and losing weight. And so...
Well, Ron was saying it was stress, which it might have been.
Sure, but like Scabbers was in bad shape is the point. So like it might be a kind of...
And George were saying.
Yeah, humane. Not to say that a cat eating a rat is ever like a humane thing, but I understand where they're coming from with this. Do you think that Ron cares about Scabbers? Or is it just kind of like... He's being dramatic in this moment because he spent the better part of two books just complaining about Scabbers.
Well, Ron, as you said, does like to complain about things. Mm-hmm. But I will also say, you know, even if you are taking something for granted, when you lose it, you know, it will still, like, it may still upset you. And also, Ron had been trying to help Scabbers when he had been worried that Scabber was going to pass away and got him the rat tonic and all those things.
That's true. I'm thinking, I didn't mean to suggest that like Ron is making this out just to like get attention and be a drama queen. I think it's a kind of you don't know what you got till it's gone situation. Like,
sure. But Ron, he had also been like living with that for a little while Scabbers is not doing well.
Right. I think that it was seeing Scabbers starting to decay, let's say, or decline in age is maybe the nicer way to put that.
We don't know how old Scabbers is, but as far as we can tell, Ron...
It's old.
Scabbers has been in Ron's family, not even as Ron's own pet, for a good chunk of
like
Ron's life.
The same amount of time that Ron has been alive. I think it's kind of when Ron was seeing like, oh man, Scabbers is like getting on in age, Scabbers isn't doing so well, that was when he realized like, oh, I actually do care about this rat.
Maybe. And to an extent, he definitely cared about Scabbers beforehand.
Yeah,
but yes,
I think he wasn't aware of it
before
then. Yeah. So the main action of this chapter is Quidditch, which is probably why I don't have a ton to say about it. But Cho Chang enters the scene. Oliver Wood says to Harry that Cho Chang will be the seeker for Ravenclaw. We have never heard about her before. Truly, I can't even remember if we've seen a Quidditch match against Ravenclaw before this.
Is this the first book that they're actually telling us the name of players other than Malfoy?
It seems like it. Yeah. I mean, like we knew about Marcus Flint.
Yeah, the Slytherin captain and then Malfoy.
And Montague. Montague. Has he shown up yet?
I don't remember.
He might be the next one. Yeah. This is kind of because like we got Cedric in the last game and now there's Cho Chang. So we're hearing about the Seekers, really. The other players are inconsequential.
Yeah.
Davies, Roger Davies. He's also mentioned very briefly when he shakes hands with Wood. He's the captain of the Ravenclaw team. Sorry, I cut you off, though. What was that?
It seems like we're getting flavor from these characters just to add a little bit of extra detail to what would just be. And then Harry flew around.
Yeah.
And then the Ravenclaw Seeker came nearby.
Yeah.
And I was like, Ravenclaw Seeker has a name.
I think it's good because the fourth book expands the wizarding world so much that I think it's necessary in this book to kind of expand the Hogwarts circle a little bit more and start to hear about other people, because they become the kind of chess pieces in future books.
It was nice that we're not solely focused on Gryffindor versus Slytherin.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, we still are. But
I don't like in a book when it's like, oh, we needed like a fifth year to be a major character in this book, and this is the first time they've ever been mentioned. You know, I like it when they've been mentioned before that, and it was like a character that had some build up.
What do you think the order was, though? Do you think
that's J.K. Rowling
decided, oh, I'll name the Seekers this year?
And then later was like, ooh, I got some characters. I think that to a degree, some of this was planned in advance. I think to a large degree. Yes. So Cho Chang is mentioned. Wood says that she will be the seeker for the Ravenclaw versus Gryffindor game. And he says something about her being injured, but she recovered in time for the game, which Wood is upset about. And just like, when was she injured and why?
I mean, they did play against Hufflepuff.
Did they?
Yeah, because Ravenclaw beat Hufflepuff by like 100 points.
Okay, yeah, no, that's starting to sound right. Okay. I didn't remember that game happened because it was mentioned like in passing. So I was what happened to Cho?
Gryffindor is still in the running.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense then. All right, so let's talk about the name Cho Chang. Oof, can you tell how excited I sound? Okay, so taking this just on face level, according to the Harry Potter lexicon, Cho may come from the Japanese, and I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher a lot of pronunciation today because I'm a dumb white person. Cho may come from the Japanese chow, which means butterfly. Chang is an ancient Chinese surname meaning constant, mountain, or open. From the Harry Potter wiki, Cho is a common Chinese and Korean name. Chang in Chinese can mean prosperous, common, bright, sing/chant, or unhindered. There is also a Chinese word, Chao Chang, which means melancholy.
Okay.
So a couple meanings to play with. Cho Chang as a character, going a little bit further, and her name in particular, has long been a matter of debate and I would say controversy within the Harry Potter fandom. Some feel that her name is too close to Ching Chong, a pejorative term used by English speaking people to mock people of Southeast Asian descent. And fans have also criticized her portrayal in later books, which we really can't get into here, but there's some problematic aspects of it, I would say. And we've kind of hinted at this a little bit and talked about it, especially when we had Angel on for, what was that, like 302, 303? Because Angel had some feels like about Cho Chang that we can, I think, get into more in future books. So like that alone is kind of problematic. I do see the line there of like these do seem to be actual names within like Chinese and Korean and Japanese culture. But like you could have picked literally any other name. You didn't have to pick something that is so close to effectively a slur.
And an argument for like, oh, she went for alliteration. That's not really a pattern we see anywhere else.
No.
Yeah. So like,
it didn't have to be alliterated.
Cause like that's common in plenty of other,
especially like children's media. Yeah. Alliteration is very common, but not in Harry. I truly cannot think of any character in Harry Potter who has an alliterative name other Luna than Lovegood. Cho, that's a spoiler. No, it's okay. Yeah, I guess. Sure. But like, that's the only other one.
I can't think of another one.
Yeah. So that problem's already. Adding on to that, Cho Chang is
Godric Gryffindor, Rowena Ravenclaw.
Oh, geez. Okay. Yeah, I guess.
Salazar Slytherin.
But like those are alliterative in a way that makes it like kind of high fantasy in a way, you know, adding like a fantasy story to the fantasy. Yeah. These are like presumably within the conceit of the books, these are the characters. These are real people. Whereas Godric Gryffindor is like kind of this mythical figure. So sure, he can have an alliterative name. There was no reason that Cho Chang had to be alliterative.
Yeah, I mean, the main part is like not that it never happens, but it wasn't a running thing that she needed to do for all of her characters.
Yeah. So neither me nor Joe are qualified people to comment on that debate. I hear and see absolutely both sides of the name thing. I think that there is a defense to be made. And, you know, I like to assume that nobody is ever trying to be malicious, but I also know who wrote these books. and her track record is very bad. So, like, I don't trust her to get this right.
Yeah.
Also, Cho Chang is the only Asian representation we have in these books. And we can only really assume that because of her name, which is bad, like, in all respects. It never says, like, oh, Cho Chang was a pretty little Asian girl, because that would feel weird, too.
Don't say that.
Yeah,
that's
so much worse. Would be awful, too. But, like, we don't have any other characters that we have any reason to believe
that
are...
in so many better ways.
I was saying it that way to say, like, that would be problematic, too.
Okay.
But, like, we can assume that Cho Chang at least is probably Asian based on this name. I feel like it would be bad if she was white and was carrying this name around, too. But, like, there are no other characters that we have any reason to believe are Asian. And I'm sure that Rowling would counter that by saying, like, oh, there are plenty of other Asian students at Hogwarts, and I just didn't talk about them. Or, like, oh, this character was actually Asian, and I just never mentioned it. That kind of thing. And that is, of course, a part of a long pattern that she has of her revisionist diversity in these books of, like, oh, well, I never mentioned it, but, like, this student was Jewish. And that's a whole thing, too, with the one student she has confirmed is Jewish, too. He hasn't shown up yet, but he has a real, like, this is a Jewish character name.
Okay.
That, like, she plants these, like, token diverse characters in, and then she gives them these garbage names like this. And I guess I could live with Cho Chang being named Cho Chang if there were other Asian characters that didn't have names that sound like slurs, but Cho Chang is the only one.
And
out of a school,
that,
presumably of 1,000 students, there's one Asian character.
And the fact that potentially part of her reasoning was, I'm not going to give her any extra details. Like, I'm not going to spend time talking about who she is as a person in this book. So I better just make sure you know right away.
We don't hear anything about, like, Cho's family or Cho experiencing discrimination at Hogwarts because she's one of the few Asian students. It's just like, oh, we know she's Asian because she's got
a description.
Yeah.
It could just be a description of her.
Yeah. So problems abound. I fully believe that if it is not explicit, it is not representation. So even on top of that, Katie Leung, I think I'm saying that right, the actress who plays Cho, also received a fair amount of internet hate in the wake of her casting, which is not surprising for the time period. This first appearance probably was... Yeah, she was in Prisoner of Azkaban or Goblet of Fire. I don't know who they cast. I don't think they show this game in the Prisoner of Azkaban movie. But
no,
she's,
and Cedric Diggory was a fully different actor as well.
So, but she is prominent in the Goblet of Fire movie. So that was like 2004, 2005. And like we very recently had a Asian American actor in a high profile role. I'm thinking of the woman, oh gosh, what's her name, who plays Rose in the Star Wars movies.
Oh, Kelly Marie Tran.
Yes, thank you. Kelly Marie Tran also very recently was driven off the internet by goblins that want to like be just garbage humans toward Asian people online in movies. So Katie Leung experienced this 15 years ago. It's still happening today. And Katie Leung, who she opened up about this experience actually very recently on a podcast called Chinese Chippy Girl Podcast. And her episode came out in like early March. So like a month, 2 months ago. And she was told by her publicist to just ignore this and pretend it wasn't happening.
Oof.
Yeah, I'm going to have to listen to that podcast and see what else she said about like her time in Potter and her time since then. I did look at her IMDb page. It seems like she's been getting work and pretty consistent like TV work. So good for her. I think she did well in this role that is probably racist. And we should mention, too, that Asian is like a pretty...
So broad.
Yes, it's a pretty big blanket term. Like Russia is in Asia. Vietnam is in Asia. Like India and Bangladesh are in Asia. These are all very diverse places. So Cho is presumably Chinese, Korean, Japanese. We don't know. And that's the other thing, that it's like, it's so indistinct as Asian representation. It's like, you know, she can kind of be any of these. Because
whatever
her name,
you'd like it to be.
Yeah.
Although you specifically said that her name had Chinese and Korean descent.
Yes. The Japanese one felt like a bit of a stretch. So, and there are certainly people who are Chinese Korean, you know, yes. That's absolutely a thing. I don't mean to discount that, but it's, again, never explicit. We have no idea. If it was said like, yeah, Cho Chang is Chinese, we could, you know, go off of that and be like, okay, well, presumably that means she has Chinese parents who would choose a name that has a Chinese meaning. But instead we have to be like, oh, well, in Chinese, it could mean this. And in Korean, it could mean this. And in Japanese, it could mean this. And it's just this whole issue of just like, she is this token broad Asian, meaning Southeast Asian character. And like, it gets worse from here. All we know about her is her name at this point. So that's your daily outrage at J.K. Rowling for you for this Cho Chang nonsense. And we will certainly
talk about it more later.
Yeah.
But at least not for a while.
Yeah. At least we don't have to deal with overt racism for another book or two.
just the one.
It's so frustrating. And I should note, too, that, like, you know, I just said, like, oh, India is a part of Asia. We do have Padma and Parvati, but, like, they're nothing characters. They have nothing to do. So, like, yeah, it's good to build out that background and have, like, a diverse character within the Gryffindor house. And, like, Dean Thomas is black as well. But these are all background characters. All the main people are whiteies. So, like,
Yeah.
But Hermione could be black. I never explicitly said that she was white. Ugh. So we get a lot of descriptions about how cool a firebolt is as well.
We spent a lot of time on the firebolt.
Yeah, like more time than we spend talking about Cho Chang.
Madam Hooch gets really into the firebolt and just like holds it for a long time. Wood has to cautiously ask her to hand back the broom as if he was negotiating with someone.
And she's like rattling off like the specs, you know, like you would look at a car and be like, it has like 350 horsepower and dual firing pistons. And I don't know if any of that makes sense. I don't know anything about cars, but like
horsepower is a thing. Pistons are things.
I should probably choose like something I know something about. So
it's
like
got a gas tank.
I did download Gas Station Simulator, but if you got like a computer, you know, if a student was like, oh, I just got a new computer and it's like, oh, let me look at it. It's got like a, oh my gosh, you found a 3090 in here and it's got like a 5950X in here. And like, oh my gosh, that's what Madam Hooch is doing. And I feel like sometimes I'm that person in my classroom.
I believe
like,
that.
Yeah. Like when a fellow teacher told me about like the pencils she ordered, I was like, oh, let me tell you about my mechanical pencil from Japan. So I appreciate that Madam Hooch gets to be a nerd. Madam Hooch also, though, this is jumping ahead a bit, at the practice, she's like assigned to oversee the Gryffindor practice. She falls asleep. Like, and she sleeps for like hours.
Well, presumably she falls asleep at some time during the practice. Like, it wasn't that.
We don't know when the practice started. I would assume like the afternoon. And then it's like dark out when she wakes up.
Yeah. So,
which is a whole big mood.
You don't know that she fell asleep in the beginning of practice.
I guess.
She was sitting there watching these students for a long time and she's not allowed to help them.
But like
she
was so excited about this fireball. You think that she would be like excited to watch it in action?
Well, there's only so many times you can watch a fast car go in a circle before you fall asleep. And a few hours.
It also feels just irresponsible, too. She's there to protect Harry and she's just sleeping.
She'd wake up if necessary.
It's not a good look for Madam Hooch. And especially, like, we talked about how Madam Hooch is, like, eagle-ish, like, hawk-ish, you know? So, like, one would hope that she would watch Harry like a hawk, not take a nap in the stands.
For a period of time during that practice, she definitely did.
Okay.
And then she fell asleep.
Okay, so we hear about how fast and cool the firebolt is. Like, Harry is able to outrun bludgers, and he quickly catches the snitch at practice. How is this fair? I know we've talked about this, how, like, you can buy your way to, not victory in Quidditch, but, like, you can buy better brooms, and that gives you an advantage over your competition. It just seems wrong that Harry's allowed to have this. Like, this feels like steroids in professional sports.
I mean, I don't know if I would go that direction. I feel like my first thought is like polo, which I've never played polo, but like
I don't even know what you do in polo.
You're on a horse and you hit things, I think.
But like, what's, do you score a goal? Like what, how do you win in polo?
You definitely get points somehow.
Okay, what is water polo then?
Water polo is it, in my head, is like you swim in a pool and you basically play soccer with your hands.
Really?
So that
isn't that water volleyball?
Water volleyball involves a net.
Okay. So like, does soccer.
That you hit over.
Okay.
Oh boy. So there's a reason that we're not going to get into too much detail about sports.
There's a reason our Quidditch episodes are the way that they are.
But like, I just think of it. Oh, you got a real good horse for your game, you know?
Sure.
You may have spent a lot of time, a lot of money to get a really good horse. Maybe you spent a lot of time training that horse. But whatever you did, you got a real good horse.
Okay. I understand your analogy and let's go with it. Polo is known as a bougie sport.
Yes.
Quidditch is for the masses, man. Like, it's like anybody can play Quidditch.
Anybody with a broom.
And, yeah.
And, you know, if you get a really good broom, you can play it better. With all that money.
How is that fair? How is that okay?
That's just, it's accepted by this community. So. Okay.
All right. Well.
That's what we have to live with.
Oh my God. So they have this Quidditch practice. Everybody is real excited about the Firebolt. Harry's having a nice time. He does let Ron ride it to kind of cheer Ron up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harry and Ron are heading back from practice and they see some eyeballs.
Harry's pretty sure that it's the Grim, mm-hmm. and then Ron takes out his wand, turns on a light, and it's Crookshanks.
Right. How big is Crookshanks?
Crookshanks is a big cat.
Okay.
Like a
Maine Coon. Have you seen pictures of Maine Coons?
No.
Okay. Do you remember Tub Cat?
No.
Okay. We can talk about that later.
Okay. Yeah, I believe Crookshanks is, you know, larger than your average cat.
Okay.
So, like, especially in a distance, big glowing eyes. That seems to be what Harry saw in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So if in the dark he saw big animal eyes,
mm-hmm.
I guess if he's already on the lookout for the Grim,
sure.
He could be afraid. And Ron makes a pretty reasonable comment about how Hermione's just letting Crookshanks
roam free.
And I don't know if we've talked about like indoor cats versus outdoor cats.
I think we have, like, more than you would expect for a Harry Potter podcast. We really talk about, especially, I mean, I guess with this book it makes sense, but we do talk about like cat ownership a lot, especially for two people that don't have a cat.
But we want to have a cat.
Okay, yeah. So
we just
go on.
Live in an apartment where
tell
we
us
can.
About indoor versus outdoor cats.
Well, so there is a major issue with people having outdoor cats and those outdoor cats just decimating the wildlife nearby.
Yeah. And just, Hogwarts has got some wildlife nearby.
Yeah. Like, I don't fear for the giant squid, but I'm sure there's some small birds and other creatures that Crookshanks could do a number to if Crookshanks is just a wild, wild cat that's, you know, roaming around killing small creatures.
Yeah. And likewise, part of the issue with like outdoor cats, which I put in quotes because there are no outdoor cats. I mean, there are wild cats, but your cat that you have should not be in. Oh, he's an outdoor cat. No, you've trained your cat badly. It's also dangerous for the cat. In the real world, you know, they get hit by cars or they find an animal they can't that, you know, that's bigger than them. That goes after them. And that certainly can happen here at Hogwarts as well. There's some creepy crawlies and nasty guys in that forest that will kill Crookshanks. So, yeah, Hermione is very irresponsible here. And, like, in a way that almost doesn't track for the character.
But she is new to pet ownership. And, like, that's not something she has read much about, I'm sure.
And she's got other reading to do this
year. She is currently swamped reading 400 more pages of a book.
Yeah. Do you think actually? Okay. So I think that in ordinary circumstances, Hermione would be a very conscientious pet owner. You know, like the type of person that would like get a book and learn everything about owning this pet. Do you think that her bad pet ownership is her being swamped and her refusal to like listen to Ron's very reasonable complaints is her kind of masking that and not being able to deal with her stress well? that she's so insecure about the way that she's handling her pet that she gets very defensive in these moments.
I could definitely see that argument. I would also say that I believe Crookshanks was a
surprise. Like an adult cat.
I'm saying like she was dropped off at Diagon Alley by her parents and given money like, hey, go pick out a pet.
Yeah.
If Hermione was told in advance, hey, you're going to go get a cat specifically, Hermione would have done a lot more research.
Right.
About she was looking for an owl.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I think it can be both things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's just something I'm thinking about. Let's see. So Cedric at, I guess, breakfast the next day before the Quidditch match, Cedric comes over to congratulate Harry on his replacement broom, which is very nice. My boyfriend, Cedric Diggory, is a good guy.
A lot of people come over to check out. Yeah,
but Cedric's the one I care about.
Yeah.
Because he's my boyfriend.
And also, Percy has made a 10-galleon bet with his girlfriend.
Yeah, let's talk about this.
And doesn't have the money to pay her if he loses.
Which is bad.
Which is, like, that's not how you should bet.
No.
And also, really?
Like, I've got a gambling problem. And I say that as somebody who has never gambled actual money. I mean, like, I've done, like, oh, I bet you a dollar. But, like, I don't gamble actual money because I know how it ends up. But, like, even I know if you're in the red, you don't gamble more money.
And Percy is a Weasley, so he is in the red to start with.
And he has bet Penelope 10 galleons.
Which is a lot of money.
I did the conversion. In today's U.S. dollars, that is $69.69.
Very good.
50 pounds, or about 57 euros. That is a lot of money, especially for teenagers with no jobs, and especially poor teenagers with no jobs. Like, that's of money.
What the Clearwater family is like.
But we know Percy's family. And maybe Percy is trying to marry up here. I don't know. But that's a ton of money for like a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
When I was 17, I didn't have $70 to gamble. I had to like put gas in my car so I could go to work.
I mean, at this point, they're basically adults.
Yeah.
So in
they don't
theory,
have jobs.
Well, I don't know if you get paid to be a head boy.
I'm
going to
say
girl.
Probably not. Just knowing how Hogwarts works, I'm going to say probably not.
I mean, like, because RAs get stuff.
I guess. But they're not. Well, yeah, I guess that is similar.
It seems.
Somebody in Britain like more, who goes to a school with head boys, tell us if they get paid. But
are
like,
there real head boys? Is that a real thing?
Yeah. Prefects and head boys are like a real thing. I'm like, the way you're looking at me makes me feel less sure, but I'm like 90%
sure. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah. So. I always thought that all this was like Harry Potter stuff, like even having houses, but like there are real boarding schools that do this stuff.
Head boy is a bad name.
It is. Yeah. So head boy bets $69 to his girlfriend that he is going to, that his team is going to win this match, and nudges Harry. And he's like, hey, you got to win, buddy, because I don't have this money. Like, so many
my
problems
gonna
here.
My girlfriend's going to break my legs.
It's so bad. I take it back. There's a lot going on in this chapter. Malfoy comes up to talk some smack to Harry about like, oh, you know, can you put a wand on the broom that can keep the Dementors away or something like that? And then Harry comes back and sasses Malfoy like to next Tuesday. He says, oh, pity you can't attach an extra arm to your broomstick, Malfoy. Then it could catch the snitch for you. This is such a good comeback. I love it when Harry gets to be sassy. There's like the true apex of this is coming up still in book 5, but like early sassy Harry is very important to track, I think.
Yes, and it does develop.
Yes. Yeah. So the Quidditch match comes around and like my notes basically stop here. There's a little bit more, but the Quidditch match comes around. I do appreciate that Cho plays Quidditch very cleverly. She knows
Oh, you go.
She knows that she can't outpace Harry because her broom is bad and his is like God tier. So she focuses instead on blocking him, you know, like getting in his way, interrupting his momentum, that kind of thing. And like this could be just her as a player. It could be part of a larger strategy as a team to like incapacitate him or get enough of a lead with like scoring goals with the Quaffle that the snitch catching it doesn't matter anymore. So like I think that this is pretty clever. Like it's a it at least undercuts my argument a little bit of like, it's just so unfair that Harry has this broom. Nobody can hope to win. At least they're like playing with strategy here.
There are strategies. And Cho is definitely on defense. Mm-hmm. And she's tailing him, not just to be able to block him wherever, but also she's just going to worry about making sure he doesn't get the snitch.
Right.
So she is letting him look out for it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's smart. And it makes sense, too, that this play is coming from the Ravenclaw team, not yes. like Hufflepuff.
And, you know, the rest of the Gryffindor team is doing well, but. The Ravenclaw team is catching up as Harry is finally able to get a hold of the snitch. He sees it several times and Cho distracts him enough so that he loses it. Part of this process involves a few Dementors coming onto the field.
Before that, Wood encourages Harry to knock Cho off her broom. Is that legal in Quidditch? Are you allowed to do this? Like, I know the bludgers are part of that. I was
going
to
say, there are two players whose job is to knock people off of their brooms.
But, like, let's say I'm a seeker and you're a seeker. Are you allowed to just, like, give me a good kick and knock me off the broom?
If I'm barreling forward and you get in my way.
I said a kick.
I don't think Wood is saying kick this girl.
He does tell Harry to stop being a gentleman, so it's possible. But no, like, I get what you're saying. She's getting in his way. If Malfoy
had gotten in his way, Harry might have plowed through him.
Okay. So as Joe said, some Dementors show up.
And Harry immediately takes out his wand, uses a Patronus.
He stuffed his wand in his t-shirt. I'm sorry to keep interrupting you. He stuffed his wand in his t-shirt. How does that work?
What do you mean?
Oh, wait, that's when he's like laying out his clothes. Never mind.
Okay. He's wearing like a uniform.
Yeah.
Okay. So he pulls out his wand, casts a Patronus, and it seems to be effective because Harry is not affected at all by the Dementors. And he catches the snitch, goes in, and is so excited to tell Lupin when he comes behind him in the locker room.
No, he lands on the field and like all the Gryffindors the rush field. Out.
Okay,
yeah,
that's so
all the
better.
Gryffindors and Hagrid and Lupin. Yeah. I do want to say, though, all of this happens very quickly. Harry casts the spell and doesn't look back at what happened.
Yeah, he's not focusing on that. He's focusing on the game.
Right. And it seems like he was able to conjure more of
full
distinct
Patronus, but he didn't look at what it was.
Right. That's important. Because Harry then sees Lupin on the field, like Joe said, and Lupin appears shaken but pleased.
Okay.
Why do you think he's shaken?
I know the answer.
Okay.
So what do you want me to say?
Well, we can have some fun here.
Why do you think he's shaken?
Well, I know the answer. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm just pointing it out here. But it's interesting. So Harry tells Lupin all about it. He's like, it was so good, man. Didn't feel anything. No problem. And Lupin's like, well.
Well, you cast a Patronus at some students.
Yes.
They were Slytherins, so it's fine.
It was Malfoy, Crabbe, Goyle, and Marcus Flint. And I believe Malfoy is sitting on Crabbe's shoulders.
Yes.
So it was three Dementors. They dressed up like Dementors to scare Harry. I do have to issue a small, not like correction here, but Galadriel points out that Flint should have graduated by now.
Well, I think it's possible to fail classes and be held back.
In a Scholastic interview, again, this is according to Galadriel. I did not look for the actual interview. J.K. Rowling says that Flint was held back a year. Do you think that was planned in advance, or do you think that she realized that she lost track of how old Flint was?
I think she had originally set him up as a dense meathead.
Yes.
So, honestly, it could be either way.
Okay. It is interesting to find out, though, that you can be held back at Hogwarts.
Yeah, I mean, Hogwarts isn't going to graduate you.
No wizard left behind.
Oh, boy. Yeah, Hogwarts wants to make sure that you can, you know, protect yourself at least a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, they're about giving you a quality education and like following laws and stuff with their uncertified teachers and unqualified teachers.
They were interviewed.
Right, that's all it takes. My bad.
Yeah.
Why did I have to do a demo lesson? They could have just interviewed me. Right. So McGonagall does thankfully punish the Slytherins for this. Mm-hmm. But the punishment seems kind of light. They get detention and 50 points from Slytherin.
Do you think that's 50 points flat or 50 points apiece?
She didn't say each.
Yeah.
Previously in book one, when she takes 50 points from Gryffindor each, she specifies each.
That's true. This doesn't seem like enough.
No, and especially because the last time Dementors came onto the Quidditch field, Harry almost died.
Yeah.
Like,
but on top of that, Snape took 50 points away because Ron spoke out of turn.
Exactly. I feel like Slytherin should be, like, decimated for this. Like, this should be, you can't play Quidditch. Like, I think that she should ban Malfoy and Flint from playing Quidditch for the rest of the year.
I feel like that would be reasonable.
I agree that that would be reasonable. I believe they should get more than one detention. And we don't know. She just says you get detention. But, like, we don't know if it's one night of detention or, like, 5 weeks of detention. And 50 points is nothing. Snape takes 50 points away for anything in the world.
In previous years, 50 points was a lot, but
I mean, now it doesn't matter.
Now it doesn't matter because, like, the numbers actually, are arbitrary.
You know what? Harry got 60 points in book one for defeating Voldemort.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was saying in previous books, 10 points made a big difference.
I still feel like this punishment is too light. Like, this is like, somebody could have died. You could have killed someone.
Yeah. Well, Harry saved the day anyway.
Yeah, they have a party in the common room. Hermione does not join the party because she has to read, like, 400 pages in a book of how British muggles live. She's freaking out. Ron is being mean to her. He won't let her join the party.
Hermione says Ron doesn't want me to join the party.
Right.
Ron doesn't say, no, you're not allowed to. And Ron's, like, out there talking
smack about her.
Yeah, but Hermione is not being controlled by Ron in any way.
Do you want to be at a party where people are insulting you?
She's in the same room regardless.
Okay, but, like, also Ron's brothers are throwing this party.
Okay. I don't think that Ron's brothers have anything against Hermione.
Okay, well, I'm glad you've never experienced ostracism, but
I believe to an extent.
I'm sorry you were popular, Joe. I'm sorry you got to go to the parties.
I believe to an extent Hermione was putting this on herself.
I do agree.
And yes, Ron was still upset and he brought up, like, Scabbers would have loved to have some of these whatever chocolate flies.
Yeah. Why do they only eat disgusting things?
Because it's magic, Cassie. Like,
we've talked about this before, but, like, I don't want to eat bug candy. I'm not interested in that. So they have this party. It's great. You know, they raise the roof and then they go to bed. Harry has a dream, and I feel like dreams are usually significant and, like, worth talking about. I don't know that I feel this one is. Harry is chasing something in the forest and it's something hooved. He can't catch up to it. And that's the dream.
So we're looking for another centaur.
Okay. If you insist.
Or a unicorn.
Uh-huh. I mean, I know why he's shaken. Yeah, so that's the dream.
Those are the only two animals with hooves,
yeah,
that are in any of the books, especially right. This one.
Yeah. Harry has this dream. He's woken up rather abruptly by Ron screaming.
So Ron screams as soon as he sees Sirius Black. And everyone gets out of bed right away. And they make a point to say, like, Harry struggled to open his curtains. But that's not enough for a grown man to just walk out of there.
So you're saying, like, where did Sirius Black go?
Yeah.
I do not know. And also, how did Sirius Black get in?
Well, we find that out.
This is the second incident that we've had where Sirius Black is spotted in the castle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still that question of, like, how is he able to just roam the castle? We do find out that Sirius Black was able to access the common room because he found Neville's list of passwords.
Yeah.
Which McGonagall is very upset about.
Understandably so.
Sure, sure. But, like, did Sirius Black steal that list of passwords? Did he find it on the ground when he was just taking a stroll through the Great Hall? Like,
he probably stole those passwords.
Okay.
Or, like, honestly, it's Neville. He found those passwords.
But like you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It raises a question of like,
out on the prowl.
Does he have somebody helping him? Is he able to disguise himself? What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
So it ends with McGonagall just being pissed at Neville.
Yes. And Neville is gonna have some problems.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I mean, he's definitely gonna be in trouble.
Oh yeah, for sure.
This is not.
But like, is this Neville's fault?
Partially, I think Sir Godigan. Sir Cadogan.
Cadogan. Okay. Well,
Sir Cadogan might have been changing the passwords too much. Sir Cadogan should not have given out all of the future passwords if he was planning
like,
on
what
changing
kind of security
them.
System is that? If you're planning to rotate the passwords, don't give out the rotation ahead of time.
Yeah. And.
It's foolishness.
Sir Cadogan should have known what Sirius Black looked like. Nobody gave him a picture.
Well, like, that's the thing. Sir Cadogan was like, yeah, I let him in. He had the password. So, like, I do question how connected to the reality of this situation Sir Cadogan is. Like, if anybody told him, like, yeah, if you see Sirius Black, don't let him in, even if he has the password.
I feel like that would be the reasonable thing to say to the guard.
But, like...
But did anyone train him of like, this is what Sirius, like, did no one say the man who came in last time, this is what he looks like?
Don't let him in.
Let us know. I feel like you tell all the paintings that if you see the man that looks exactly like Sirius Black that's roaming the halls and already attacked one of your fellow paintings, let us know.
Unless it didn't look like Sirius Black.
Well, he was identified as a man.
Oh, right. Okay.
And the fat lady fully said it was just Sirius Black.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the end of the chapter.
Yeah. That's about it.
Sounds like it's time.
For spell of the week.
You cut me off. I was going to do it.
Okay. Go for it.
No, it's too late now. Just do it. Whoa. It's time for spell of the week.
So we're going to be talking about the Golden Snitch, which is the only magical thing that we can talk about that we haven't really talked about yet that happens, that is involved in this chapter. So the Snitch, the Golden Snitch, is based on the Golden Snidger.
Yes.
It is a small golden bird, just like a regular wild animal.
There's a drawing of it in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Not Quidditch Through the Ages, I'm sorry.
Okay.
And maybe actually also in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Probably. Oh, I'm sorry, the Golden Snidget. So yes, the Golden Snitch is based on the Golden Snidget, and it was introduced in 1269 when a man named Barbarous Bragg went to a Quidditch match and released a Golden Snidget and said, I'll give anyone who catches this 150 galleons, which we already said 10 galleons was a lot. So 150 is a lot.
Especially when you factor in inflation.
Yeah. This was centuries ago. So.
Yeah.
And then pretty much every game after that, they released a Golden Snidget. And in honor of that bet, I guess, the golden snidget was worth 150 points.
Yes.
Now my question, which I couldn't find an answer to, was the Golden Snitch is how you end the game.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end the game before that?
Catching the snidget.
No, but the snidget was introduced during a game of Quidditch that was already being played.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would have to read Quidditch Through the Ages.
Yeah. Look,
so check
it.
Back with us 10 years from now. We read Quidditch Through the Ages.
I don't.
Book by book, chapter by chapter.
Let's not do that.
Okay. We don't have to.
No, we're not. I don't want to.
How do you feel about Cursed Child?
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. If we ever get that far.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, so Snidgets apparently are very fragile and would be very easily crushed.
Snitches or Snidgets?
Snidgets.
Okay.
Snidgets were very fragile animals, and very often when they were caught, they were crushed accidentally and would die. So with them being released in every single Quidditch game, they were almost brought to extinction.
Yes.
They were put on the endangered species list. And finally, they went and found someone to make a metal version of a golden snitch.
Yes.
Snidget. So now it is a golden snitch. It was created by a skilled metal charmer, Bowman Wright, and it is enchanted to act the same exact way of a golden snidget, as well as be the same size and move its wings in the same way.
Okay.
Additionally, it has flesh memory, which is used to the first person to touch a golden snitch. It will identify that person. So that would how that's how they would dispute who actually won the game.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I was going to ask, why would you do that?
Yeah, it's truly so, just like, oh, if we almost touch it at the exact same time, the person who touched it first won.
Can you erase its memory?
No, you have to make a brand new snitch for like every single game.
Like, isn't it made out of gold?
In theory, yeah.
That's limited.
You might be able to like break it down and make another one. But
is alchemy possible in this universe? I can't remember.
The Sorcerer's Stone was the very first book.
Oh, yeah. the Philosopher's Stone, Joe, please.
Sure.
Pay attention.
But yes, because of the flesh memory, anyone who handles a snitch before a game has to wear gloves, including the person that actually makes it, which is a lot of work to put in just to like in the rare chance that someone tries to catch a snitch at the same exact time as the other.
I mean, listen, I don't know a lot about like metalworking. I kind of assume you just wear gloves anyway.
There seems to be a lot of intricate details.
Yeah.
But gloves. You might not. I don't know.
Plus, presumably the flesh memory is like a spell that they put on it.
It seems to be built into it.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Which is also the rest of the magic making this thing work is built into it. Anyway,
is it buffered or unbuffered RAM? It's a little computer joke for you.
Okay. Any questions about the golden snitch?
How fast is the flash memory?
Nope. Okay. Well, that was spell of the week. And we don't have any emails.
You don't know that. You don't have the email address.
I'm willing to guess.
You want to bet 10 galleons on it?
Yes.
Okay. We don't have any emails.
All right. Give me 10 galleons. I'll break your knees.
Oh, no. Gladly, it's fantasy money. We don't have any emails.
If you would like to email us, you can email us at patrickstotalis at owlpost at patrickstotalis.
There you go. Second try. Yeah.
I will always do that every single time. Or you could tweet at us at Potrificus.
Okay. Yeah.
Or you could just follow us on Twitter to see when we post episodes or just subscribe to us on.
You're really not selling this.
I mean, I don't have any passion for this part. You could subscribe to us
as opposed to all the other
your
parts.
Podcast app of choice. We are Patrivis Totalis, so do that. Bye.
That's not how we end. That's not it.
Join us next week for chapter 14.
13.
We just read chapter 13.
Oh, nuts. I got to change some stuff.
Snape's grudge.
Well, we got to do it nice. Join us next time for chapter 14.
Snape's grudge.